Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
What's up and welcome into Inside the Clubhouse. I am thrilled to be here sitting in for David Haw. I'm Mark Grody. Lucky for everybody listening today to Inside the Clubhouse, Bruce Levine is here to take care of you. What's up, Bruce?
They tried their best to make sure I wasn't, but it's great to have you here, Mark. It's great to talk a little Chicago baseball like we do every Saturday between 9 and 11. David Haw taking a little R&R today, and you and I will talk about the White Sox and Cubs and what's going on, what isn't going on, the ups and downs of the Major League Baseball season, the fact that we're reaching the one-third pole of the Major League season and where these teams are at. Unfortunately for the White Sox, we know where they're at. We'll hear from their general manager, Chris Getz, talking about what they might be doing sooner maybe than any other Major League team. And the Cubs starting a big series in St. Louis after being rained out last night.
Yeah, as for last night, indeed postponed, as Bruce told you, that game to be made up as a doubleheader on July 13th. I did not see any times as of yet. I assume that that is still TBA to be announced. As for the pitching today, it was supposed to be Shota Imanaga last night. The Cubs will wait. They will go with the regularly scheduled Saturday starter, that is Jameson Taillon today. The Cardinals sticking with Miles Michaelis. Why, Bruce, are the Cubs going without the ERA leader today in Shota Imanaga?
It's a great question, but it's one that falls right into the wheelhouse of what they've been trying to do with Imanaga from the beginning. As you know, Mark, and if you don't, in Japan, they pitch once a week. And the plan for Imanaga coming here was to get him to adjust to Major League Baseball pitching every 5 days rather than every six in Japan, and getting him as much rest in the first quadrant or so of the season so he can make these adjustments and save that arm a little bit and get adjust to what's going on here. So in their mind, this is a perfect time to give him an extra couple days, rejuvenate, and continue on with what is the best ERA in baseball by a starting pitcher right now, and one of the best pitchers in baseball outside of Suarez of Philadelphia. Would be the only argument for starting the All-Star game for the National League right now in Imanaga.
I think it's pretty smart. We are open, by the way. I know Inside the Clubhouse is always, because I'm a regular listener, it's heavily interactive, whether you want to call us or text us, 312-644-6767. We've got Robbie the Tree Triano on the other side. He is the man to whom you will speak if you would like to call Bruce Levine and me, Mark Grody, here at 312-644-6767. We are open for you until 11 o'clock here on The Score. Guest-wise today, we have a tremendous guest list today. At 9:30, former Cubs broadcaster Chip Carey, who these days is the broadcaster for the St. Louis Cardinals, will be on with us in about 25 minutes from right now. 9:30, the great Chip Carey will join us. Also, at 10 o'clock, Ken Rosenthal, the senior writer for The Athletic and MLB on Fox, he will join us at 10. And then we are thrilled that at 10:30, we will have Cubs reliever Luke Little on, who has had two tremendous relief appearances recently. So looking forward to talking to him. Like Bruce said, we will get to some White Sox. White Sox lost to the Orioles last night, 6-4 the final. Michael Kopech allowing a two-out, two-run double in the eighth to pinch hitter Adley Rutschman, as the Sox have lost the first two games of that series. I promise you we will return to the White Sox here in a second. But the guy that we want to focus on first here is on the Chicago Cubs because it continues to be one of the biggest stories for the Cubs, and that is Kyle Hendricks, who we most recently saw on Thursday. That was a 3-0 loss to Atlanta, and Kyle Hendricks struggled out of the bullpen in high leverage late in the game. He goes 2 innings, allowing 2 runs on 4 hits. Bruce, what has stood out to me about Kyle Hendricks in his starts, and then it rose up again and out of the bullpen, that is the fact that he's getting ahead of guys. He is getting the 1-2 counts, the 0-2 counts, and then going full, oftentimes giving up big hits on the 1-2 counts, on the favorable counts, which simply isn't Kyle Hendricks. What are you seeing with Kyle Hendricks?
Well, I think you identified it properly, Mark. That one pitch, that put-away pitch, is not there any longer. He is not able to get his fastball on the corner. He's not able to get his changeup down in the quad, in the lower left quadrant or right quadrant. It's just, the only thing you can say is we're watching Kyle Hendricks toward the end of his career, okay? And the Cubs are trying to find a spot for him that he can help the team. I believe if it was just another guy and not Kyle Hendricks, the great icon that he's been for the Cubs, the great person that he is, the favorite of the fans that he is, he would have been released already.
Mm.
This is the last year of his contract. He is just one baseball person with the Cubs told me, look, we love him, but we can't start him any longer because – in fairness, he's not giving us a chance to win a game.
Then why would they use him late then? Why would they use him in high leverage if they're just – because it sounds to me like if that's what they think, they should be burying him.
Where would you
– well, don't use him.
Well,
put him in the fifth.
At that point, you can't afford that in Major League Baseball anymore.
Yeah, but don't you think that if the Cubs think that he is cooked right now, don't you think that there's a safer place to use him, like with a big lead or a lopsided game?
No, there is no safer place because you need that – you need – that 13th pitcher, okay? You need that eighth guy in the bullpen. You just cannot use the same bullpen guys every single day. And if you notice, the Cubs play an awful lot of one-run and two-run games. So there's no safety net when he looks down to the bullpen, Council looks down to the bullpen and goes, you know what, Kyle, this is your spot here. We're in a tie game. We're down one. You got to hold it. They were down one. They ended up down 3, and that was the end of it. But again, first time in the bullpen, second time in his career. If it doesn't work, the end of Kyle Hendricks' career as a pitcher for the Cubs is coming up.
Let's listen to a couple of people on the we'll just call it the Kyle Hendricks conundrum, and I see you guys lining up at 312-644-6767. We'll get to you on Inside the Clubhouse, Bruce Levine and Mark Rohde. Jed Hoyer talking about Kyle Hendricks.
You know, our job is to win as many games as we possibly can, but as a human, I mean, like he's been, I think I've said this before, like I can't imagine a better teammate, like, period. I can't imagine someone that's more accountable. And, you know, this guy's been, you know, sort of a metronome for, you know, 9 or 10 years, and he's pitched some of the biggest games in club history. And I don't, you know, I think, you know, at this point, I can't imagine, you know, nothing he could ever do here for should ever have any impact on his time here. You know, he's been an amazing member of the pitching staff for a long time, and amazing member of the organization. So, yeah, I think that, you know, do I root for him to succeed at an incredibly high level? Yes, because I just think, you know, I can't imagine a person, yeah, like I said, being more accountable, being more humble, and just going about things the right way for as long as he has. So, yeah, of course, I do root for him at a very high level.
Cubs president of baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, right there, and it's clear that he is trying to be as respectful to Kyle Hendricks as possible while being sensitive towards the fan base as well, Bruce.
People want to know if Kyle Hendricks understands whether or not this could be the end of his career.
Bruce, unfortunately, we do not have the Kyle Hendricks cut at this point. But I will say this,
from
listening to Kyle Hendricks, I mean, you and I have both heard a ton from him. He has taken this, and it is a demotion to the bullpen. He has taken this better than just about any athlete in my time covering sports that I've ever seen, really in any sport. And obviously, we're talking about baseball. But the way he answered those questions, and not even like just respecting the process, and even conceding what he has done is not good enough. That he gets
no. The only time I ever heard him. After his last start, he said, I only made two bad pitches. He gave up 11 hits. He didn't go five innings. Okay, so that's the first time that I remember in the 11 years of him sounding like he wasn't seeing reality. Okay, other than that, as you say, the most respectful, open guy to taking a negative question, turning it into a positive answer. Just a terrific guy to deal with, a terrific pitcher in Cub history, and one that I respect so much because of the fact that he had so much success in his 254 starts during his career, never throwing more than 89, 90 miles per hour, okay? It's the fun of watching a guy pitch. It's like why we love to watch a guy like Imanaga or Mark Burley for all of his career. Guys that we can relate to as players that we always thought we were better, but they were human. These guys are human guys that get great big league hitters out. You know, what's cooler than that?
It is really fun to watch, or it has been fun to watch what Kyle Hendricks has done in a Cubs uniform for all of those reasons. And part of why I think that the Cubs... I actually compare this a little bit to, and stick with me on this one here, Bruce, a little bit to Adbert Alzolay, in that when Alzolay was blowing those saves, I think, and they kept marching him back out there, they kept saying, he cannot really have lost it. Has this man really, it's not like Alzolay had, his pitches were different, his velocity was the same, all of that, and they just, really, is he done? And I think there's a similar circumstance with Kyle Hendricks, and really, is this really it? Because, Bruce, you know this from covering him every year, and I covered him closely as well. There's always a time during the season where you think Kyle Hendricks might have lost it. And it's because of the velocity that we all go to that place. And then he turns it around. It happened last year where we thought, you know, he was injured and then he gets in. He wasn't good. Then he goes out west. I think it was a San Diego game. Pitches like one of his vintage 1-0 games. And you're like, okay, he's still got it. But we haven't seen the vintage this time around.
There's just no margin for error left in his game, and there's too many mistakes. So even if it's not hard contact, which everybody loves to talk about in baseball now, lots of hard contact. He's hitting the ball so well, he's hitting 210, but look at the tremendous amount of hard contact. Don't give me that crap, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not into that. I'm into base hits. I like to a guy like Arraez, who – hits 300 every year, led the league twice.
I love Luis Arraez.
Led the league twice in hitting, each league.
And nobody wants
him. In a row. No. Soft contact. Leads in soft contact. But leads in contact, okay?
Yeah.
Give me contact.
Yes, sir. Give me Mark Grace.
Give me a bloop single.
Yes.
Give me two of them.
Absolutely.
One more, sir. I'll have another, okay?
You got that, Robbie? Get him another.
Yeah, So from my perspective, the hard contact and the excuse making that we make for players is just hard to deal with these days. You either get a hit or you don't. You know, Hawk Harrelson had the famous line,
and
he created it 20 years, 25 years ago, hang with him.
Hang with him.
Yeah. It means you hit it hard. Next time you'll get a duck snort and it'll be a hit and they'll make up for it. Okay?
He did love a duck snort, didn't he? He would get emotional over it. It's a thing of beauty to the Hawkeroo. 312-644-6767. Tell you what, why don't we take one of these calls before we do a switch over to the White Sox? Somebody, you know what, Robbie? Bring me Bob from Arlington Heights. I think he wants to talk about Kyle Hendricks.
Good morning, gentlemen. I think you guys hit the nail on the head. I don't think Craig Counsell put Hendricks out there in a low leverage situation Thursday to do anything other than to give him every possible opportunity to show him and 35,000 people, what's left in the tank? You know, that was anybody's ball game at that point. And first guy up got a base hit. Second guy up got a walk. He struck out Acuna. And, you know, Azuna's ball was nearly a three-run homer. And you know, at that point, it was still the Cubs game to win. And, you know, Bruce hit on it exactly. Were it any other pitcher, he'd be DFA'd today. They're not going to DFA him. They have to get him to a soft landing. And, you know, he's, you know, I think Council is in a tough spot because, you know, I'm an old guy. And when I first became a manager, one of my bosses took me aside after he saw me taking an employee out to lunch. And he goes, "This is your business." But he goes, "Never name a horse you might have to shoot." Well, Council's in that position now. Okay. Nobody's going to DFA Hendricks, but I think, you know, Kyle probably knows it's getting to be that time. And, you know, we Cub fans appreciate everything he's done.
Bob, thanks for the call, man. I think that'll be it for the horse shooting talk today on this show, Bruce.
Look, Hendricks is going to go down in history as one of the great pitchers. We're talking in past tense too much, okay? And he said it right. They will not just DFA him. He will go out in some other style. He'll go back on the IL. They will find some way, some comfort level for him, unless he insists and he says, "I still think I can pitch, you know, let me go."
I wouldn't be surprised. Like, if they did let him go, I wouldn't be surprised if he went somewhere else and found some sort of success, like, for a while. I'm not saying, like, he's going to go on for years and years and have this, like, second chapter to his career, but I do think that
I don't agree. I mean, why would he pitch better somewhere else?
I don't know. It happens. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, if you throw 97.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. I'm a proponent of the way he pitches, but Kyle cannot finish all of his pitches now, and he gets hurt on things that he can't command in the zone. He gets hurt bad, okay? And whether it's hard contact or soft contact, it's too much barrel on the ball. You know, it just is. It's sad because among my favorite people that I've ever covered in the game, he's right up there on that Mount Rushmore. He's a phenomenal individual, a great guy, and so much fun to watch over these years.
Chip Carey coming up in about 10 minutes here on Inside the Clubhouse. That's Bruce Levine. I'm Mark Grody. Let's go to Paul in Valpo. Hello, Paul. You're on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce and Mark.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Just a couple quick questions. Imanaga, is it, when you talk about pushing him from today, is he going to start the TBD game tomorrow, or is he going to start the opener against Milwaukee?
We don't know. It's not tomorrow. It's one of the games in Milwaukee. So
okay, good. And
I imagine Council will probably tell the reporters on the premise that it's either Monday or Tuesday of next week, although they have a four-game series, so it depends how it lines up. You know, they have a couple pitchers that are going to be coming back. Smiley's coming back this weekend. There's a chance that Wicks will be back within by the end of next week. So with all that in mind, they're probably just trying to line it up the way they feel it works.
Gotcha. That was going to be my other question was, so Wicks, maybe one more rehab start. And then my other question on that, Bruce, is all these guys at AAA that are killing it, PCA, Canario, Brennan Davis, why not give one of those guys a chance to maybe inject some life into this lineup? I know they're not going to sit half for a long time, or Suzuki for a long time, but, I mean, why have all these guys down there tearing it up at AAA? I understand it's a different game, but get them up there and maybe inject some life into this dead lineup.
Thanks for the call, Paul.
I'm with you. No harm in that whatsoever. Obviously, the offense has been not doing what it needs to do, Mark. They're hitting .225 as a team, the second lowest in Major League Baseball. They have to find a little pop in the middle of the lineup. You know, Suzuki's not back to where he was before he was hurt. Bellinger's not back. No, the lineup is just there's not a lot of good feeling about where that lineup's at with Hap slumping all year and the catcher's not providing any offense whatsoever.
They don't have guys who are hitting the ball over the wall. That's a big problem, and I understand that at the end of the Theo Epstein era and the beginning of Jed Hoyer, that they were philosophically they wanted to change things to contact, but it's almost like there's been an overcorrection and guys certainly are not performing. And one other thing too, like I'm following Brennan Davis like everybody else. I'm excited about him, but please tell me that that's not the answer to the problems for the Chicago Cubs. Like maybe he comes up and there's a spark, but guess what? Brennan Davis would probably come up and the chances are that he would struggle too, even if he gets hot for a while. Like in a year in which you are supposed to win, that can't be the solution. I mean, there's not a sure thing down there. I know PCA hit the homer the other day, but we can't just dwell on that. We'll return to Cubs talk for sure and more of your calls, but we do want to talk a little bit about the White Sox in this segment as well. Again, they lost last night to the Orioles 6-4. One of the great citizens and players for the White Sox this year, Bruce, has been Tommy Pham. What's it been like covering him, and how much does the organization value that man?
Well, it was a complete turnaround for the White Sox. They went 11-8 after he showed up when they were something like 3-23 at the time that he was signed to play with the White Sox. And Tommy Pham's always been an outstanding hitter, a guy that controversial in some ways because he's a guy that's always honest about himself and his feelings about the game and his teammates. But nonetheless, he is one guy that they feel not only has helped them gain some credibility, but down the line here will bring back a good player or two in the mix that they're going to want to continue to do this year, Mark. They're not planning on keeping a lot of these veteran players past the trading deadline.
Let's hear what the president of baseball operations for the White Sox, Chris Getz, has to say about Tommy. What's up, fam?
You know, having Tommy around, you know, some of these younger players, or just the team that we have on the field right now, I think, you know, you could go, you know, person to person in the clubhouse, and they would tell you that, you know, they admire the way that he goes about his business. I mean, he hasn't taken a pitch off, both on the defensive and offensive side. He doesn't take anything for granted. He's a guy that's had success in this game and continues to have success, you know, as he's reaching his late 30s. And that's just a testament to his determination. You know, when you're looking at, you know, is he a guy that is going to be with our club for in the future? I think right now we want to take advantage of having Tommy Pham on this roster. You know, when we were able to sign him and insert him in the lineup, it's, you know, he clearly made an immediate impact. So we're going to take advantage of Tommy while he's here. He's a guy that just goes about his business, and we hope that there's an osmosis effect to the rest of the clubhouse based on the performance that he's brought to the team.
Easy guy to like, Bruce, but also probably a very easy guy to trade.
Chris Getz?
Oh. Well, I mean, there's a certain contingent of the White Sox fans who would definitely say that.
I think he will be an easy guy to trade. Getting back what you think he's worth might be a different story, okay? Tommy Pham is going to go somewhere else and instantly help a lineup in a year where offense is way down in baseball. So he's going to have some marketability. The question is it going to be satisfactory to Chris Getz when to pull the trigger on it? Is it June 1st, 15th, waiting to the trading deadline to get back that young player that they feel can have an impact on the White Sox in 2025, 26, or 27?
He's got some big decisions to make, and in that vein, let's hear one more cut from Chris Getz, and that is about what you're talking about, the general potential trade talk with the White Sox.
Yeah, we've had conversations with other clubs. Teams have reached out to us. You know, similar to the off season, you know, the if we feel like there's opportunities to make our club better, we're gonna look at those opportunities. You know, and then when you're looking at the Dylan Cease trade that happened just before spring training started, you know, is that really hasn't stopped us from having those conversations. I do think the urgency may pick up on as we get closer to the deadline. You know, the standings are still taking shape. Clubs are still getting to know, you know, their own teams and what their needs are. So, you know, you certainly don't want to force anything, let things play out a little bit. But we anticipate, you know, certainly an attraction from clubs with some of the players we have on our team.
Chris Getz right there. Yeah, the interesting part of the season for the White Sox has yet to come. We need to take a break here to make room for Chip Carey, the TV play-by-play man of the St. Louis Cardinals. You remember him with the Chicago Cubs. We're going to talk to Chip next. It's Inside the Clubhouse along with Bruce Levine. I'm Mark Grody in for David Haw on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
A bouncing ball, this should do it. The Cardinals are in first place. The Redbirds win it 8-5. Gordon Richardson being congratulated. And now the pressure has been put on by the Cardinals.
Johnny Keene about to bring the Redbirds their first pennant since 1946. And the Cardinals, one pitch.
Cardinals strike, come on!
If you've never heard Mr. Gussie Bush excited, you just heard him over my shoulder.
Let's go! Get him out!
A high pop ball.
Man, some good old school stuff right there, Bruce.
What are you trying to say, Mark?
That you're old.
I'm old?
Wow. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Wow. Old school.
No,
Bruce.
It's called great broadcasting.
It was, man. Yeah. That's like not the impersonation Harry Carey that you hear.
There's no cookie cutter to that broadcast.
No. With Harry and Jack Buck. Absolutely. Welcome back into Inside the Clubhouse. Along with Bruce Levine, I am Mark Grody. Great to have you with us here until 11 o'clock today. We're going to talk to Ken Rosenthal at 10 o'clock. We've got some terrific chin music today, and Luke Little of the Cubs will join us as well. We now have another guest on the line with us, Bruce, joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Bruce, what we got?
The fine broadcaster of the St. Louis Cardinals, our good friend Chip Carey, nice enough to take some time out on a Saturday morning to join us on Inside the Clubhouse. Chip, like everything in life, it's not always the way that we set it up. The night last night where you were supposed to broadcast the Cubs and Cardinals along with your friend Joe Buck just didn't work out. I was disappointed in the rain out. I'm hoping, like the Cardinal-Cub game, that is also rescheduled down the line.
Hey, Bruce, good to hear your voice. Yeah, we're hoping the same thing, but as I said to Joe last night, in a way, it's probably a good thing because hasn't America suffered enough? So we'll see if we can make it work with his busy schedule with football coming up. But yeah, it was disappointing that we didn't get 9 innings in last night, but we did have a lot of fun chatting for about an hour and rolling back those clips like the ones you played last night, not just of Harry, but of Joe's dad, Jack, here in St. Louis.
Chip, what's going on, man? It's Mark Grody. It's great to hear your voice.
You too, Mark.
Yeah, always a pleasure to have you on the air and to see you when I get a chance and talk to you and all that. What do you think when you hear those old school broadcasts that we just played coming into the segment?
Well, I love it. There's not any talk about exit velocity, launch angle, pitching probability, expected ERA, wins by replacement, any of that stuff. It was just old school drama. You know, the great announcers of our sport are the ones that grew up in the radio booth, and their ability to paint a word picture and their ability to describe things in real time in such a descriptive way, I think is what enraptured and enamored people with our sport. I mean, the greatest compliment, I said this last night, the greatest compliment an announcer can ever get is when someone says the following, and I'll use the example that was given to me by a Hall of Famer, Dave Niehaus, with whom I was privileged to work in the early 90s. He grew up in Princeton, Indiana, and every summer his uncle would pick up the pickup truck, and they'd drive across Illinois, and they'd come to Sportsman's Park and watch a weekend series against whom, it didn't matter. But Dave used to listen to Harry and Jack on Camel X and all the travails of the Cardinals and whoever they were playing. And those guys made the grass seem so green and the ballpark like the Roman Coliseum, and the players were so big and strong, and the uniforms were impossibly white. And when Dave and his uncle pulled up to Sportsman's Park here in downtown St. Louis years ago, his first thought was, this is it? You know, because because the mind picture, the theater of the mind that they were able to create every single day to the audience made the ballpark and the players seem almost unbelievably superhuman. And that's the job, right? It's to sell that, to sell the product to the audience and create that imagery that you never forget. And Dave never did. And that's what inspired him to become a big league broadcaster, too.
So for me, the hardest job in broadcasting is to have a father or a grandfather who was a great broadcaster before them, and then trying to create their own broadcast, their own image. And you, my friend, have done that above and beyond with having your father, Skip, who was a fantastic broadcaster for so many years in Atlanta, and your grandfather being the icon that he has been. And yet, you are able to come up with your own style, be iconic in your own way for so many years as a broadcaster. How did you manage to navigate not being Harry Carey or not being Skip Carey?
Well, first of all, I appreciate your compliments. I don't know if I buy that myself, but thank you. You know, I've said, and Bruce, you know me well enough to know that I'm as full of you-know-what in person as I am on TV, and maybe that's the secret, right? I think some of the advice that my dad and grandfather gave me as a young broadcaster was, don't try to be us. You can't be. There's only one Harry Carey. There's only one Skip Carey. And the challenge for me was, at the time, both of them were on national TV every single day during baseball season. It's hard to find your own voice. But you have to be yourself. It's a personality-driven business, and it's no different than being a radio talk show host or a nationally syndicated writer or a local baseball writer. You have to write your own voice, and you have to do it your way. And luckily for me, I had really good teachers, and I could watch them and pick things out from the way they do things and avoid some of the others. And I guess the best parallel I can make is something I read of the Jimmy Page, a great guitarist from Led Zeppelin, said one time, "We're all thieves." And that is, we take the riffs from Muddy Waters and from Chuck Berry and from Keith Richards, and we just make them our own. It's all the same notes, but we put our own twist on it. We make it our own, and it has our own unique signature in broadcasting or writing or being a talk show host or a doctor. All of those things are pretty much similar, and luckily it's worked for me.
Yeah, and just like Led Zeppelin and Jimmy Page, as long as you honor those that came before you, just like you are doing right now, right, Chip?
Yes. I guess. I mean, you know, look, it's ball two, ground ball to second, and here's the promo. I mean, it's really pretty simple, but there is an art to it, right? It's I mean, it's knowing what to do and what not to say, and it's the hard part about TV is all of us who work in TV talk too much. We do. The pictures are there. People can see it. But I think what fans have to remember and think about, and I try to remember too, is that TV is sometimes on as background noise. You know, when people aren't necessarily sitting in front of their TV for 2.5 or 3 hours watching pitch one to pitch 200 combined between two clubs. And we have to reconstitute and remind and recap and be a little bit more descriptive from time to time for people who are just getting on with their day. And luckily, the Cardinals are happy with the way I'm doing that.
One other broadcaster question, at least from me here, sure, as we're talking to Chip Carey, voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. You and your grandfather, Harry Carey, both have very unique distinctions, and that is both of you have been the voices of both the Cubs and the Cardinals, which I don't know, that might be unprecedented beyond you guys, because we all know how complicated that can be considering how fierce the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry is. Has that felt at all strange doing the Cubs and the Cardinals? And we know how loyal you have been to the Cardinals, and we know how loyal you were to the Cubs when you were a broadcaster here.
Well, I got to tell you, it was a lot of fun last year coming to Wrigley Field and having 10-year-olds cuss me out and tell me things about my mom I didn't know.
I think they talked about you on the radio too, Chip. I kind of remember some stuff on the radio too.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little bit different. But, you know, no, I mean, it's look, when I got to Chicago, I never envisioned leaving. When I went back to Atlanta, I never envisioned leaving. But you know the old saying, make plans, God laughs. And I'm delighted to be here in St. Louis. They've treated me and my family better than any other place that I've been. And I'm not talking about the fans. I'm talking about ownership and the TV people. You know, I grew up here. I understand the culture. You know, I was one of the kids in St. Louis that knew the 64 Cardinals lineup before I knew my ABCs. And those who hear my broadcast still think I don't know my ABCs. So that's probably been helpful. But no, I on a personal level, coming back here is really satisfying. I'm sad for the way that it happened because, look, Dan McLaughlin's a friend of mine, and I feel horrible about that. But if someone was going to get the job, I wanted it to be me. And I wanted it to be me because there was a lack of closure in our family. I was supposed to work with Harry in Chicago. He died before the start of the 98 season. And all the stories that I was hoping to hear about seeing Jackie Robinson for the first time and taking the train out of Union Station with Stan Musial and what was Red Shandings like. Tell me about Ebbets Field. What did you think when baseball moved to the West Coast with the Giants and Dodgers in 58? All of those kinds of stories, not to mention, what was my dad like as a kid? How did you meet my grandmother? What was your favorite color? I don't know any of those things about Harry, and I would have loved to have spent that kind of time with him so that I would have gotten to know him on a granular level, and he would have gotten to know me and my family and what made me tick, and so that was lost forever. But coming back here and seeing where he grew up and seeing some of his old haunts and hearing from the fans who say, I grew up listening to your grandfather on Camel X, as a way of keeping him alive, and I think is really helping close that wide-open circle that our family certainly wants to see closed.
Well, Chip, we know your favorite color now is red. Mm-hmm. So there's,
yes.
And, you know, in your case, you're able to change your favorite color as you move on.
It's illegal, but you've done it.
It's okay. Yeah. I'm wondering, looking back at 98, and the great race between McGuire and Sosa. It was the greatest of times. It was the worst of times. When you look back on it and you look at the energy and the emotion that fans and people put into it, announcers put into it, great calls that are now considered, were these real calls? What is fantasy? What is reality? How do you, what compartment does Chip Carey put that home run race, calling those big home runs in down the line 25, 26 years later?
It hasn't changed it in any way, shape, or form for me because you can't live in the future, right? You know what you know, and you broadcast and you do the games based upon the information you have at the time. And when you think about where baseball was and the anger that fans had over the silliness of the players and the owners not being able to get together for the best interests of the game and ultimately the people that pay for it, 98 was the perfect tonic for it. And you're right, the great rivalry with the Cubs and Cardinals, which I think is the best baseball rivalry in our game. Forget the Yankees and Red Sox. Forget the Dodgers and Giants. It's Cubs and Cardinals because it encompasses half of our country. It was remarkable. I mean, Sammy would hit a home run in the afternoon. McGuire would hit two at night. And then Sammy would come back the next day. And seeing 5,000 people out on Waveland and Kenmore trying to catch fly balls during batting practice was unbelievable. The energy of those two guys and what the 98 season meant was unbelievable. Look, I wasn't a Cub fan when I got to Chicago, and how I remember reading how bad the Cubs were in 97. Mm-hmm. 98 came out of the blue. I mean, nobody saw that Kerry Wood was going to come in and strike out 20 guys, and Sammy was going to go on this home run hitting barrage, and that the Cubs were going to be relevant that year, much less a playoff team, was great. And for a young announcer trying to find his way in a new market, there's nothing better than having a good team with a lot of great stories to welcome you to the market. And while all the focus for the Cubs that year was the home run race, for me, the pivotal moment was Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game. For me personally, that was his coming out party, and I think that was the moment where fans saw that Steve Stone and I were a good team and that I was capable of a big moment in a big game in a big market of telling that particular story. And I'm always grateful for that because that was sort of the early season entree that, hey, man, we've got something special brewing here. We don't know what's going to happen, but at least these layers of the onion through early May are encouraging. And let's see if we can get through the annual Cubs June swoon and see where we are. And where they ended up was going to the postseason when they knocked off the Giants in the wild card game.
Yep. Yeah. Improbable season. I always love those pop up years for the teams that we root for that just come out of nowhere. And that
the unexpected, right? The unexpected. That's what makes it fun.
Absolutely. Bringing it back a little bit to the present as we talk to Chip Carey, St. Louis Cardinals TV play-by-play man. It's Inside the Clubhouse along with Bruce Levine. I'm Mark Grody. Cubs-Cardinals, for people who don't know, the game was postponed last night. Could it be made up as part of a doubleheader on July 13th. Jameson Taillon for the Cubs today against Miles Michaelis for the St. Louis Cardinals, who recently have been playing some pretty good ball. They're back up to 23-26. Chip, if you can kind of take us on the what feels like a roller coaster season so far for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, I think I can explain it pretty succinctly. The first 6 weeks of the season, offensively, is how the Cubs are playing now for the Cubs. We got no offense at all. The team was hitting around 200, if not below. They were under 200 with runners in scoring position. They were getting tons and tons of chances and just could not get a big hit. As a result, they were really pressing, trying to get three hits with every swing, and were striking out at a ridiculously high total. The pitching was very good. The bullpen has been outstanding. The Cardinals are catching the baseball again, like Cardinals teams that you guys have seen before. But what's changed of late is the at-bats have been a lot better. They're taking their walks. They're working counts. They're coming up with the big base hit. They're seeing positive things happening for them. And they're supporting a pitching staff that was an absolute disaster last year that's been really, really pretty solid this year. They've got some questions in the fifth spot. They're going to skip Matthew Liberatore today. So you'll get Michaelis and Gray for today and tomorrow night. The Cardinals get a break in that they're going to miss Imanaga, which is a great thing. A guy that leads the world in ERA will happily take that break in this particular series. But we've only played now one team out of our division. It's been Milwaukee, and the Cardinals have stubbed their toe. They've gone 1-6 against them. But there's so much divisional play left that St. Louis still feels like they have a really good chance to move toward the top of the division, if not past the leaders here by July 1st. They've got to play good. There's no doubt about that. But coming off of a 91 loss season and being 8-9 games under 500 at one point, things were looking pretty bleak here until we won a game in Milwaukee 2 weeks ago. Now that they've done that, they've righted the ship, and I think they're trending in the right direction. Now we'll see if they can keep it up. But the way they're playing, I think that's a pretty positive indicator of where this club has the potential to go.
Chip, Mark, and I appreciate your time so very much, but we can't let you go without talking about the fourth generation of Carey's announcing. Talk about your twin sons and their careers right now.
Yeah, right now my son Chris is doing the Oakland A's games. He's doing about 70 games on TV for Oakland, doing a phenomenal job. He's doing mostly home games for them out there. He's having a blast. He's working with Dallas Braden, and he's in a perfect spot. Young broadcaster, young team that's going to be moving to Sacramento and who knows, Vegas. That'll give mom and dad a reason to go visit him in a couple of years, which is always a good thing. And his identical twin brother, Stefan, is in his third year with the Amarillo Sod Poodles. A Sod Poodle is a prairie dog, by the way. That's the AA affiliate of the Diamondbacks. And he's working most of the games by himself. But he's been joined by Drew Goodman's son, Zach, and they're partnering and working together the home games only in Amarillo. Stefan does all the road games himself, and he's just as talented as his brother. He's a really great kid. They're both fantastic people. That's a credit to my wife, Susan. And he'll probably get a shot, we hope, in the big leagues next year, and that's one more off the payroll, guys, and that's always a good thing. So we're really, really proud of them as people. The broadcasting part is secondary, but they're on their way, and as a dad and mom and a husband-wife team, we couldn't be prouder of them.
Chip, thanks so much for the time, and looking forward to down the road maybe you and Joe getting together again. If not, we'll enjoy your broadcasts always and your friendship forever. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Bruce, thanks a lot. Give Arlene my best, and let's get Getty and Alex back together, okay? Let's make real news.
Thanks. Take care, my friend.
See you later.
See you soon. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
That is the great and the wonderful Chip Carey, who just joined us on Inside the Clubhouse and brought us Sod Poodles. I enjoyed that. Wasn't that your nickname in college, Bruce, the Sod Poodle? Wasn't that? That wasn't it?
It had something to do with a dog, but... I don't know if we can go into that.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll take the break right now. Coming up on Inside the Clubhouse, top of the hour, Ken Rosenthal, the senior writer at The Athletic and MLB on Fox. You know Ken. And then at 10:30, we'll talk to Cubs reliever Luke Little. It is Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and me, Mark Grody, filling in for David Haw on The Score. Really good stuff with Chip Carey in our last segment here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine and Mark Grody. The Score has the only local broadcast of tonight's game against the Cardinals. Pre-game coverage begins at 5:40 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call. First pitch is at 6:15 tonight, and you can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. Coming up on Inside the Clubhouse, we're going to talk to Ken Rosenthal, MLB on Fox, Looking forward to talking to Luke Little as well, the Cubs reliever, after what I thought, Bruce, I don't want to get carried away. It's been a pretty good first hour for us, I thought, on the program. Took some calls earlier on Kyle Hendricks. Chip Carey was fantastic. We also have Chin Music coming up. Probably the most important episode of Chin Music ever. Maybe the most involved.
Because you're here doing this show?
Because I am here for Haw.
Taking a week off?
Exactly. Haw is feeding me this information. He is texting me and telling me what to say. And he said, make sure you say that this is going to be the most important episode or segment of Chin Music ever.
He wouldn't say that.
You don't think he would say that? No. He's not self-important.
Not with you here. Yeah. No.
He's trying to sabotage me. That's what's going on.
No, he wouldn't do that either. But it has been a good... I give it about a B- the first hour. We're going to try to do better.
Oh, wow. We got work
Let's
to do,
just
man.
Try to do a little bit better.
Okay, I got a little cocky because I had us around a solid B or so. So, all right. You know what we're going to do? I'm going to reflect during this break right now and try to be better out of the gates, which will be with Ken Rosenthal.
This is for all you listeners out there, this is called radio dancing. When you only have 2 or 3 minutes left before you go to another break.
Right.
You're trying to hold the audience, which we hope you do, because Ken Rosenthal is coming directly up after the break, which is only going to be about 5.5 or 6 minutes from now. So in the meantime, we'll dance. You do what you have to do. Okay. This is Inside the Clubhouse with Grody and Levine on the Score.
Really good stuff with Chip Carey in our last segment here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine and Mark Grody. The Score has the only local broadcast of tonight's game against the Cardinals. Pre-game coverage begins at 5:40 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call. First pitch is at 6:15 tonight, and you can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. Coming up on Inside the Clubhouse, we're going to talk to Ken Rosenthal, MLB on Fox. Looking forward to talking to Luke Little as well, the Cubs reliever, after what I thought, Bruce, I don't want to get carried away. It's been a pretty good first hour for us, I thought, on the program. Took some calls earlier on Kyle Hendricks. Chip Carey was fantastic. We also have Chin Music coming up. Probably the most important episode of Chin Music ever. Maybe the most involved.
Because you're here doing this show?
Because I am here for Haw.
Taking a week off?
Exactly. Haw is feeding me this information. He is texting me and telling me what to say. And he said, make sure you say that this is going to be the most important episode or segment of Chin Music ever.
He wouldn't say that.
You don't think he would say that? No. He's not self-important.
Not with you here. Yeah. No.
He's trying to sabotage me. That's what's going on.
No, he wouldn't do that either. But it has been a good... I give it about a B- the first hour. We're going to try to do better.
Oh, wow. We got work
Let's
to do,
just
man.
Try to do a little bit better.
Okay, I got a little cocky. I had us around a solid B or so. So, all right. You know what we're going to do? I'm going to reflect during this break right now and try to be better out of the gates, which will be with Ken Rosenthal.
This is for all you listeners out there, this is called radio dancing. When you only have 2 or 3 minutes left before you go to another break.
Right.
You're trying to hold the audience, which we hope you do, because Ken Rosenthal is coming directly up after the break, which is only going to be about 5.5 or 6 minutes from now. So in the meantime, we'll dance. You do what you have to do. Okay. This is Inside the Clubhouse with Grody and Levine on the Score.